Whenever you enter a term into a search engine, whether it's debt ceiling or recipes for chocolate chip cookies, you're likely to be flooded by results in a split second. Now, having so much content available at our fingertips can be thrilling. But what's less apparent is how much bias is baked into the algorithms that bring certain results to the top of our Google searches and suppress others. Dr. Sophia Noble is an associate professor at UCLA in the Departments of Gender Studies and African American Studies, and she's also the author of the best-selling book, Algorithms of Oppression: How Search Engines Reinforce Racism. In her research, she's extensively detailed the negative impacts that come from rarely having women of color, particularly Black women, programming algorithms to popular search engines. And when I spoke with her, she began by explaining where we're most likely to see bias in the context of algorithms.
Well, of course, we're watching the news unfold around social media and the way in which social media algorithms are designed to foster the most engagement. And typically that means with the most titillating or egregious or inflammatory kinds of material. What that does is, of course, contribute directly to antisocial behavior, harm, depression, addiction, all kinds of concerns. In other spaces where I focus a lot of my work around Google and commercial search engines, you find that there can often be a tremendous amount of racial and gender bias. And this really was evident to me about 10 years ago when I first started looking at how girls of color in the United States were so profoundly misrepresented in a search engine. You could do searches on Black girls, Latina girls, Asian girls, and have the majority of the first page of results come back as pornography or hypersexualized content. And of course, that's an incredibly inappropriate matchup for girl children of color to be represented and misrepresented in these ways. But also, it tells us so much about how vulnerable communities and people are neglected and really not thought about in the design of these algorithms.
On the one hand, it is both an indication of a harm being done when that search material comes back. But is it, and I mean this really legitimate, is it an appropriate algorithm in terms of demonstrating how Black girls and brown girls are represented and thought of within the social system?
Well, there's no doubt that this kind of racist and sexist and kind of misogynistic representation, misrepresentation has been hanging over the lives of Black women and girls of color for centuries. These ideas predate the internet. One big difference, though, I think, is that when those kinds of artifacts circulated in Hollywood and in popular culture as kind of racist artifacts, we had much more ability to kind of comprehend the subjective nature of that. Like, we knew what it was when we saw it, and we could kind of understand the role it was playing in popular culture. When people engage with something like a search engine, they truly believe they are in a knowledge portal. They don't think they're in a large multinational advertising platform that really privileges the highest bidders, you know, who's willing to kind of optimize and pay Google the most. They think that this is credible.
Can you say more about large tech companies like Google, like Facebook, and the ways they make choices to allow or create algorithms that lead to this kind of harm and exploitation?
What I've seen over the last decade is that in response to both my critiques and other people's critiques, terrible news stories, public relations fiascos, Google will change and suppress and modify the results. It'll downrank the terrible things. So one thing that helps us understand is that the large tech companies are able to manage and they do respond to the public relations crises. We might remember the infamous photoshopped image of First Lady Michelle Obama that had a racist image of a monkey superimposed over her face. And when you did a search on her name, this image would come up first in Google Images. And of course, that elicited quite an outcry from the media and the White House. And Google downgraded that image so that that didn't come up to the top. So what we know from their business practices, and this includes Facebook and other social media companies, is that in the countries where they do business, when illegal content moves around their platforms and becomes visible, they take it down. They hire armies of content moderators to screen content. And of course, there have been amazing books written about content moderation. What we know is that these companies are not just feeding back to the public what the public is doing. That's probably one of the greatest misnomers, is that people think, well, we get these results because that's just what people are doing. What we know is, in fact, that some of the most egregious kinds of material, it has high engagement. It circulates. You know, racist and sexist ideas are big business in America, and it's one of the reasons why we come across those kinds of ideas. The problem here, again, is that many people in the public, when they're working in search engines, they really think that it's that there are some experts or gatekeepers or knowledge, you know, they think maybe there's librarians or people who are curating and making sure that the best, most truthful, credible information comes to the top, and nothing actually could be further from the truth when you're looking at certain types of social information.
It's so useful to hear you frame it this way. Like the danger of reality TV versus scripted is if we're watching a sitcom, we know that it is fiction, but we can watch reality TV and believe it to be true, right? Believe it to be a documentary of some kind. Not, I mean, documentaries are themselves edited, but we understand it to be just sort of a representation of what is rather than these profit-driven choices, right, made by these large companies.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, that's a great analogy, because in unscripted television and these kinds of reality TV scenarios, the most inflammatory, the most sexualized, right, the most kind of stereotypical and derogatory kinds of unscripted content also sell, you know, especially I think, you know, for Black people, many of us find that our lives are much more boring and ordinary and mundane and kind of regular than the way we see African-Americans represented in reality television. And part of that is because playing off of these kinds of tropes in our society, again, is incredibly lucrative. And people tune in to kind of watch the train wrecks of it. But of course, it also does the work of confirming for so many people who never engage with Black people that, you know, maybe this is an accurate portrayal. And those are the things I worry about in search engines, is people do believe that a lot of the things they encounter is accurate. Because when you look for banal, boring information, like where's the closest Starbucks, you're going to get accurate information. And that those kinds of accuracies on the mundane reinforce your trust in things that might be incredibly subjective.
All right. So I also love that you point out, one, that in the mundane, we do get accuracy, and that when there is pressure, we get change. So how might regulation and from where? FTC, Congress, like, but how could regulation from some source get us to more accuracy and to change?
First of all, that we are even able to have these conversations about regulation puts a smile on my face so many mornings, because I can remember a decade ago when we talked about regulation, people shuddered. They just couldn't imagine that the way in which that would be an encroachment upon the tech industry. But of course, you know, the tech industry is one of the most powerful and unregulated, for the most part, industries in the country, and it has so much control and effect in our lives. So yes, absolutely. The Federal Trade Commission, you know, was the focus in my book of kind of where the interventions could come from, because I think so many things we deal with on the kind of commercial internet that we all are on are matters of consumer safety and safety for the public. And I think we have to kind of think about what monopolies and antitrust approaches could do to diversify the field of play, so to speak, and to give the public more choices, but also more importantly, to give the consumers more protections. I think we need an Office of Digital in the kind of Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice. And I think victims need to be able to have recourse beyond just kind of pursuing civil claims. We don't have enough laws on the books yet to protect people. And I think of groups that I'm a part of, like the Cyber Civil Rights Initiative, who've done the critical work of getting things like non-consensual pornography or revenge porn laws on the books. The majority of the states, that has come from relentless organizing. And that has made a huge difference in the lives of mostly women who have been trolled with revenge porn and who've lost their livelihoods or been in harm's way. So laws are important, regulations important. But I think there's another part that I always want to kind of surface, which is we have defunded so many of the democratic public institutions and counterweights to this environment of tech company control in our lives. And so college is out of reach for so many people. It's not affordable. Our K through 12 schools are crumbling and are being defunded. We don't have a robust public health and public media systems. When you have a sector that for the most part doesn't pay taxes and engages in corporate tax evasion to the nth degree, the loss of those resources not only weakens all of these other kinds of institutions that would strengthen our literacy and our resolve and our kind of democratic fabric, but it also, I think, really creates market conditions for when those institutions are weakened, for those companies to rush in with their tech solutions and to continue to kind of grift off of the public. And so those are some of the things that I think are really important to also have in the conversation.
Professor Sophia Noble is a professor at UCLA and author of Algorithms of Oppression. If you think that what you heard was brilliant, it is perhaps because Dr. Noble is also a newly minted MacArthur Fellow, colloquially understood as a genius. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Noble.
Thank you.